Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Drexel.
And it is late, Drexel.
It is very late. I tweeted out that it was going to be. We're buckling up.
We're buckling up. We're recording.
It's been a long time.
I know. So it is also not a Monday.
It's not. It is. I don't, what day is it?
It's Tuesday night.
Yes.
So it's Tuesday night. I have been in Mexico on vacation.
Welcome back.
For the last 5 days. It's been, thank you so much. It was amazing.
It looked a lot of fun.
It was. It was really great. So I'm really happy to be back, though. And, I literally was coming home today and Varsha texted me and was like, Tillerson was fired. And I was like, look, I'm I don't know what to do with that.
Like, you know what? Maybe I should just stay in Mexico.
Yeah, right? Like,
cancel my flights.
Yeah, fuck it. Turn
stay in Mexico.
Yeah, super interesting because I've been completely unplugged. I'm never unplugged. I went completely unplugged and I literally, like, the first thing I see, like, when I turn my phone back on is
bleep, 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 bleep.
Yeah, Rex Tillerson was fired, and I was like, nope.
Yeah. You're like, turn back over. Walking back in the water.
Exactly. So today on the pod, we will be talking about Rex Tillerson.
Nice.
And we will also be talking about Connor Lamb and what the fuck is going on in Pennsylvania right now.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be really good. Okay, Drexel, so we don't have any listener feedback for this week because we didn't have any shows last week. We do have a quick update. We were supposed to have a very special guest on Monday for our 100th episode. But we did not, obviously, because it is Tuesday night and we do not have a very special guest.
There's a lot going on in the world.
There's a lot going on in the world.
It's hard to get special guests like this.
It really is. And, you know, unfortunately, she had to reschedule with us and we're all very sad about it.
It is. It was a sad time, but we will get her back.
We will get her back. So I still don't really want to spoil the surprise.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to keep you watching your Friday.
Your Friday newsletters.
Inbox. Yeah.
And tweets, and we'll get that information out to you.
Yes, and I promise you do not want to miss this. I'm sorry I keep teasing you with this information. I was also really disappointed. I was really excited to speak with her. So. But it will happen.
It would have been a good birthday present.
It would have been.
Because I think I emailed you on Sunday.
You did.
Saying,
you did.
Oh, we got to reschedule.
Exactly. Exactly. And, oh, and by the way, it was Drexel's birthday. How old are you, Drexel? Do you want to tell
me? 21 again.
You're 21?
Yeah.
You don't look a day over 19.
You know, black don't crack. That's how we do.
That's how we do.
I'm 21 for the rest of my goddamn life.
Wait, are you telling me that you're black?
You know, every once in a while. It just depends on who's president at this point. Trump's president, definitely white.
Definitely white. I know you hellions are out there trying to take over the world. And if you need someone to help you do it, ZipRecruiter knows that there is a smarter way to hire. And they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. So businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter, whether you have a small business that's trying to run a resistance podcast like we are, or a huge business that needs someone to help them fight Trump in other ways. Right now, hellions can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. That's ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. To try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All right, Devin. So like we said, it is Tuesday night.
Yes.
Here on the West Coast.
Yes.
We are just getting the last bit of returns in the Pennsylvania 18th. Can you tell us a little bit about these returns between Connor Lamb and Rick Saccone?
Yes, I can. I got home, I turned on MSNBC, and Steve Kornacki was in the middle of a heart attack.
Sweating.
I mean, he's just
you know, sleeves rolled up, sweating from the brow.
Like, his hand is hurt. He's got this, like, thing on his hand, and he's just, like, literally shaking and running around the
shuffling
stage.
Shuffling
papers. Yeah. He looks like he's like maximum Steve Kornacki in this moment. So anyway, you know, they're bringing all the results. Currently, there is about an 850 vote difference.
And that is due to the absentee ballots that came from Allegheny County at the last second. We're waiting on Washington County to count their absentee ballots.
Right.
But they're not supposed to count their ballots until tomorrow, but they might be counting them tonight as we're recording. So we'll find that out within the next few hours.
Yeah, it is honestly nuts over there in Pennsylvania. Like,
yeah, I was watching. I was watching CNN and Rick Santorum, who's also from Pennsylvania, was on the panel, and he was talking. You know, it's always interesting whether or not you agree with somebody. They know their states, they know their districts. So when Rick Santorum was like, "Well, you know, this district, you know, they got to come in, and you know, we know absentee ballots," and he's, you know, counting the numbers off, and he's basically like, you know, last thing I read on the way out the door was, or listened to, was Rick Santorum saying, "I'd rather be in Connor Lamb's shoes than Rick Saccone's shoes."
Right. It is so close, and I was just saying too, that if anyone ever comes to me and is like, does my vote really count? Does voting really make a difference? I would like to send you a freeze frame of Steve Kornacki's face during any election, not just special ones, during any election, because it is always close like this somewhere.
It is. And it's a lot. It's close. Like in any other election year, if this was, you know, in the past, obviously we wouldn't be paying that much attention to special elections. But every election we see as a referendum on the president and hope for the next, you know, the next set of blue waves. Like, you know, and I think that's a lot of pressure that we put on the candidate. A lot of unnecessary pressure, as if they haven't done everything that they could to get out the vote. And so, and then we get super disappointed as if the party hasn't done enough.
Right. And I feel like that happened with John Ossoff.
That did. John Ossoff was one of the first races.
Right.
So it was like, is the wave enough? Or is the anger enough right after the election to make that happen? I think we needed a little bit more of seeing the destruction. I think Democrats need to see a little bit more destruction
of the reality.
Of the reality of Donald Trump sinking in.
Right.
And the John Ossoff was just too early.
Right.
Because then after that, Alabama happened, and a few other elections happened after that. And statewide, where we flipped a lot of elections too, in Pennsylvania tonight, we're seeing a plus 20 Trump, which has never, first of all, this is a district that has never voted for a Democrat, really. And Democrats didn't even put up a candidate in the last two election cycles.
So I think that this is the really interesting part of all of this, is that this district has no business being competitive at all. And it doesn't even really, like you just said, there's no history of actually running Democratic candidates in this district, you know, in the most in recent history. So the fact that it went to Trump by 21 points, it has not been competitive historically, and it was just ruled by the Supreme Court that it was unconstitutionally gerrymandered.
The Pennsylvania Supreme Court,
the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And they're going to have to redistrict. So this is honestly kind of this almost is a referendum, though, because they are going to redistrict, and they're going to have to redo this election.
And this is pre-redistricting.
Right.
Something that I found interesting, either CNN or MSNBC, you know, talked to a couple of the voters in the Pennsylvania 18th, and there was a couple, an older couple, who were registered Democrats. I think it was MSNBC. Registered Democrats for a little while, voted for Trump in the last election, and supporting Connor Lamb in this election. And I think that that's what you're going to see across the country.
That's the blue wave.
Is a lot of Democrats coming back after this last cycle, whether or not it was because of Hillary Clinton, whether or not it was because of the Democratic Party. I think people, like we said at the beginning, at the top, which was people are starting to understand the reality of a protest vote or what the destruction that Republicans can bring to their towns or not be able to deliver on when they are the majority across the in government.
Right, right. Yeah. I think that's an interesting point, though, like Democrats coming back or people who were protest voting for whatever reason and then coming back to a more traditional, you know, position. But we were just talking about this before we started recording, is that Connor Lamb is not my favorite candidate. And you were saying that he's a centrist.
He's my type of candidate. First of all, he's a Marine. My dad's a Marine.
Right.
He makes sense in my head. He makes sense for that district, for that type of voter. And I think that that is something that we cannot, we can't forget. You know, there is a reason why people like Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Manchin win in their states, because they are a different type of Democrat that caters to their constituents. We see that happening in Texas with Laura Mosier,
right,
as well, where Democrats are looking at a race like Connor's race in that Pennsylvania 18th and saying, yeah, this is why we run candidates the way that we run candidates, because we want to make sure that we stay competitive, or at least the race stays as close as it's going to be.
Right. Well, and I think a candidate running in an area that hasn't been competitive historically and hasn't even run a Democrat in the last two election
he's
cycles.
He's the perfect candidate for that.
He's the perfect candidate. And so for me, right, he's not my favorite candidate, but he would also never run in California. I would never be in a position to vote for him.
Right. I don't think you're going to get a centristy candidate like that running at the congressional level.
Right.
I think that, you know, I was saying right before we got on that Barack Obama, for every based on policy and history, will continue to remind us that Barack Obama was a centrist.
Right.
Hillary Clinton on her positions is a centrist.
Yeah.
She would have governed as a centrist. She is a candidate, or she was a candidate, much like Connor Lamb was, except he went a step further and said he didn't go out of his way to criticize the president.
Right.
He just said, I don't want to talk about it, basically. He was just like, meh.
Or
rather talk about the issues that are here.
Right.
I'm going to talk about things that people want to talk, you know, what the voters want to talk about, and that's about it. Once he gets in, you know, he's talked about how he wouldn't support Nancy Pelosi as the leader. You know, so I
take such issue with that.
I think I can understand how people could take issue with that because we're so protective of our current leadership.
Right. But that's also one of those things where that does affect me. I'm not a Pennsylvania voter, but as a party, as a caucus, you know, hearing that upsets me.
But I also think it helped him win voters over who Republicans, once he took Nancy Pelosi off the table, they could not attack him for Nancy Pelosi. They could not use Nancy Pelosi against him.
Right.
Timeout. Stephen Hawking just died.
What?
Yeah. Sorry, we're recording and I'm like getting AP breaking news right now.
Oh my God.
Stephen Hawking has died at the age of 76. So I think that that's the kind of, sometimes we have to be able to look at the party the way that outside of California, because we do live in that bubble.
No, it's true.
And in places like you saw what happened. We talked about John Ossoff. You saw what happened in that race and how Karen Handel and Donald Trump and all the Republicans used Nancy Pelosi as that punching bag
against
John Ossoff. You saw that again in the Senate race in Alabama.
Right.
And that's not even the same chamber.
Right.
So they called him the Pelosi Schumer candidate.
Right.
So that's the kind of stuff that we have to remember. And yes, we, as much as we want to protect Nancy Pelosi, or we talked about Dianne Feinstein a couple of weeks ago, or, you know, across the country, in certain areas, that's not those names don't bode well for Democrats. Or I don't think they're talking about I don't think candidates like Nora Mosher and some of those candidates that we like are talking about Nancy Pelosi in their districts because
they're not.
So that's where can't be as
right. And I think obviously there's a strategy here. There's a larger strategy at play and what you need to do to win in your districts. And you know your voters best.
Right.
And I also believe that politics is about representation and that you as an elected official are beholden to the people that elected you and the way that they want you to approach issues, you know, and you know, obviously we were set up we're not set up as a direct democracy. It's a representational democracy. And so there needs to be that balance between party and being a united Democratic Party, but then also responding to your constituents and knowing what the people in your area want you to do, because that is why you're going to Washington. I get very frustrated because it feels like every time there's an election, every time there's a special election, and Nancy Pelosi gets shit on. And I understand why. And I understand strategically and when you're talking about, you know, more centrist or conservative districts and everything. But it's like, without Nancy Pelosi, we would not be the party that we are.
When I think that people, when I look at Republicans and when they talk about Nancy Pelosi, I don't know that to a voter, they're looking at Nancy Pelosi's record so much as where she comes from.
Right.
So when they say Nancy Pelosi, they really mean California.
California Democrat.
California Democrat. It's not about Nancy Pelosi so much as it is. We don't want California values, quote unquote, seeping into that. I think whoever, even if it was Adam Schiff, no matter who the Democrat was, it is not about Nancy Pelosi so much as it is about
being the
California Democrat. Nancy Pelosi just so happens to be the leader of the party from California at the time. So I think that's the distinction. And that's the way that that Republicans have used that. They don't use Nancy Pelosi. Because you notice they never attack Nancy Pelosi for her record or for what she's accomplished or they never attack her on Affordable Care Act. They never attack her on very specific things.
Right.
They just say Nancy Pelosi as a whole.
And which is so weird. Because if I were making an ad and I wanted to go after Nancy Pelosi, I'd be like, this bitch got us the Affordable Care Act.
That's not what they care about.
But that's not.
It is California.
Right. It's very interesting to me. It's very frustrating because, again, watching even this election coverage on MSNBC, which the Brian Williams shows, the 11th hour.
Brian Williams.
And they're sitting there and these two crusty old white dudes sitting there shitting on Nancy Pelosi.
Right. And again, I think that we have to be able to look through what that actually means. Again, you know, and I know it's hard when people get super protective of that. It's the same thing with Chuck Schumer. When people say Chuck Schumer, Republicans look at it two different ways. Chuck Schumer's New York values or Chuck Schumer's Jewish.
Right.
And Republicans will dog whistle Chuck Schumer, and either way, Republican voters will decide what that means to them.
Right.
Whether or not it is the New York values or if it is Jewish values that they don't necessarily agree with. So I think that we have to be able to look past
to tease out their dog whistle.
Right. And understand why they're using their name. It is not because of them.
Right.
Because that could be anything.
Hmm.
Like Donald Trump used an attack specifically on Maxine Waters.
Right.
Where
right.
that attack was very specific.
Right.
And very dog whistly and racist.
Right.
Talking about her IQ. So I think that he would never make that same comparison to Nancy Pelosi, and Republicans wouldn't either. So the attacks on her are a little bit different. They're a little bit more broad because they don't do that. But on Conor Lamb, listen, he campaigned on the Affordable Care Act. He campaigned against the GOP tax plan.
There's a lot. There's a lot that I do like about him. I also think I think Conor Lamb in this specific moment, in this specific context, feels a little weird, because I know when he started his campaign, he was very pro-gun and he was very...
Which is very Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I understand that. But I think when you mash that up next to this sort of moment where tomorrow kids are walking out of their classrooms in protest of, you know, failed gun reform and 17 kids were shot and killed a month ago. I feel like that's a mashup that feels very uncomfortable, even if you look at it in this broader context of Pennsylvania. And obviously a Democrat in Pennsylvania is going to need to be more pro-gun, or at least, you know, not outspoken.
But I also think that Connor Lamb, not only from a values perspective, looks at guns as, listen, Connor Lamb's a Marine.
No, I get
so
that.
So his views on guns are a little bit different. I don't know that, I think, no, having been around Marines enough, I don't know that Connor Lamb would go as far as where the Republican Party is on guns. I just think that he just believes that people should have a right to own guns, and which is a fair point for anybody to make.
Right. I just feel like it's an interesting moment for this to be such a national conversation. We're having this national conversation about gun control, and then we have this child, this kid, he's our age, he's 33.
Yeah, he's
I can barely do my own.
I think he would be the sixth millennial to have been elected.
Yeah, I mean,
to Congress.
Yeah, he's like our age, and I mean, I can barely do my own fucking taxes, and he's like running for Congress.
Right.
You know, so you know, fresh face, smart, good looking, outspoken. Yeah, he's real pretty.
He's pretty.
Like, you know, outspoken, good looking. I mean, there's a lot to like about this guy. I just think that the timing of this is not, it's not his fault. This goes back to putting too much pressure on the individual candidate looking for some sort of, you know, a referendum on the presidency, or looking for some sort of hidden secret message in a campaign. But I do think, for me, I probably would have cared less about his position on guns if it hadn't been for this specific moment. And that's coincidence. There's nothing you can do about that. But no, I mean, I think there's lots to like. I think that it's a very, very close race. I don't think we're going to know what happens tonight.
I don't think we're going to know what happens tonight, but I'm hoping that by the time that this airs,
tomorrow,
that we'll have tweeted out
good news
for Connor Lamb, because you know, I think that Democrats definitely need another notch on the belt to keep Republicans on their toes. I think Republicans are going to be on their toes either way, especially in a district like this. But because I believe there are 111 bluer districts, across the country.
Yeah.
And we only need 24 to flip.
Right, right. I mean, I will say, like, we said it after Trump was elected. Like, we're coming for you.
Yeah.
Like, we're fucking coming from you. And
like,
we're
taken.
Yeah, exactly.
I will find you.
but that moment is fucking here. And I think this Pennsylvania 18, I think this has really been like a stamp on that. Like, this is such a Republican district. It went so far for Trump. And it had no business being competitive,
and it's
here.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I think that one of the things that Republicans have been trying to spin is somewhat similar to what they tried to spin when Doug Jones won, which is, oh, well, he's, you know, he's a Democrat that we kind of like, and for the most part, Doug Jones kind of has. You know, kind of towed that line between what Alabama, voting like an Alabama.
He's a
Democrat.
Southern,
he's
I mean,
Southern
Democrat. Democrat. It's going to be different.
And I think that, you know, Connor Lamb will do some similar things. But I am excited to see him on, you know, armed services and intelligence.
Absolutely.
When we win back the House, and hopefully he's sitting on the intelligence committee and can stick it to him.
I'd watch him talk about armed services.
He can. I'd watch him talk about anything.
I'd watch him talk about his breakfast. There's a lot of disgusting shit going on in our government, and I can't really help you with that, but I can help you with your disgusting toothbrush. Quip is a new electric toothbrush company that is refreshing the way people brush their teeth and making it easy to replace your toothbrush on the dentist's recommended schedule. Quip is a sexy cord-free electric toothbrush, and you don't have to worry about getting new brush heads or toothpaste because they're delivered right to your door on schedule. 75% of us don't refresh our bristles every 3 months, and I feel like that's generous. I've said it before, but I feel like it's closer to 90%, and I really hope it's closer to 100% because it makes me feel better. So I maybe replace my toothbrush once a year, and only if I remember, and I usually don't. So with Quip, I'm an actual grown-up who replaces her toothbrush on a doctor-recommended schedule. And that's why you need Quip, to put a necessary yet annoying aspect of your personal care on autopilot. Quip's subscription model is a thoughtful and inexpensive solution for people who want to make it easy to keep up with the simple habits that will improve their oral health. I know we all have a lot to think about with all of the Trump shenanigans, so let Quip do the thinking for you when it comes to your teeth. Quip starts at just $25, and right now, when you go to getquip.com/hellbent, you get your first refill pack free with your Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/hellbent. Go to getquip.com/hellbent. Okay, Drexel, we took a quick break to kind of reset, and the DCCC called for Connor Lamb.
That's what I read. Okay. I don't put as much faith in social media as I should, but because they never actually tweeted it out.
Okay.
But maybe they issued a statement somewhere and we haven't seen it. But
We're unlikely to know tonight either way.
Yeah.
But while we're waiting, let's talk about Rex fucking Tillerson.
Yeah, T-Rex. I'm surprised Donald Trump never called him that.
I am.
Wouldn't that be so funny?
I'm deeply disappointed now.
Like
T-Rex.
Why wouldn't he have called him that?
Man,
that would have been so good for him.
Yeah, my son would have really been into that.
Hopefully not into Trex Tillerson.
Just T-Rex.
Just T-Rex. Yeah. Name. So yeah. So today was another Bloody Tuesday.
Seriously.
In the Trump administration.
Yeah.
And if you watch Maddow has this huge board where she names out everybody that has quit or resigned or been fired within this administration over the past year.
It is terrifying.
It's almost like 100 people.
Yeah.
Over 100 people.
Yeah. She always talks about she's just like special turn, like trick, yeah. Like camera tricks. So they can get all
of
them in there.
Let me move, turn around. So today, which we had kind of anticipated. Rex Tillerson.
Yeah.
This was announced, I want to say. Not necessarily announced, but this was speculated, I want to say 2 months ago.
Oh, I was, yeah, months.
Because Rex Tillerson, but it was either.
What was the quote, fucking moron quote?
Yeah. But it was Rex Tillerson stepping down, and we had already heard Mark Pompeo's name come in.
Right.
This was around the same time that Tom Cotton was being all buddy-buddy and shit.
Right, because he wanted to be director of the CIA.
Because he wanted to be CIA director.
Tom Cotton's also about 4.5 years old.
And acts like it. So, yeah. So today, Donald Trump tweeted out that Rex Tillerson would be replaced by Mike Pompeo, and that Mike Pompeo would be replaced by Gina Haspel, who is the current deputy CIA director. Put a pin in that because we'll come back to Gina in a second.
And then there was a 3-hour gap. So Trump tweeted this out. 3 hours go by, and then he calls Rex Tillerson.
Yeah, because Donald Trump was on the plane here to California,
right?
For a wall inspection, a wall prototype inspection in right off of San Diego, and a fundraiser here in Beverly Hills, which one of the fundraisers that was listed on that thing is somebody that's being investigated by the special counsel. Yeah, that's the shit. That's the shit.
The rest of the episode is just me laughing into the microphone.
Yeah, like if you can understand that, that's what's going on here in California. And so he calls Rex Tillerson from the plane. Rex Tillerson has no idea. The decision was made when Rex Tillerson was in Africa last week.
Got it.
And then Donald Trump called him this morning from the White House because Rex Tillerson did his press conference from the State Department.
Right. Today. Okay. So, but let me just like relay this timeline again. There was a tweet, mm-hmm. and then there was
because there's always a tweet.
And that's apparently how we get official news from the White House now, mm-hmm. is via Twitter, mm-hmm. which that's also how I get official news from like Roy Moore's horse, which is an excellent Twitter account. But then there was a 3-hour gap, and then Trump called Rex Tillerson. I don't think Rex Tillerson is a person worth being a person, but he is worth more. Anyone is worth more than finding out they were fired via Twitter. This is like the break. This is like the breakup post-it note from Sex and the City, circa 2002.
Oh yes, Aiden.
No, it wasn't. It was Berger. He wrote. He broke up with her on a post-it note.
I thought it was Aiden.
Oh, now we have to look this up, Drexel.
Oh shit.
Shit.
Maybe somebody will just correct us.
Yeah, someone correct us. Somebody out there correct us. Was it Berger or Aiden who broke up with Carrie on a post-it note?
Now I have two different people in my head. I see both of them.
And there's no bet. I've just decided.
There's no what?
There's a bet. You say Aiden, I say Berger. The loser has to buy the winner a drink.
All right.
So, Hellions, let us know.
Now I want to know. I can't remember.
Anyway,
oh my gosh.
But this is the equivalent of being broken up with on a post-it note, right. Except this is not Sex and the City circa 2004. This is the fucking United States government.
Right. And I kind of, here's the thing about Rex Tillerson. You know, obviously, we're not a fan of T-Rex. However, he did run the biggest oil company in the world.
Right.
To be humiliated
right.
by this fool.
Yeah. This tangerine
of a person who Rex Tillerson probably made more money than Donald Trump just by being the CEO of ExxonMobil. And, you know, he was handpicked. You know, Mitt Romney should have had this job.
Yep.
He was handpicked. And just the other timeline is Rex Tillerson's in Africa. Over the weekend, Monday, we find out that an operative in Britain had been poisoned
but then
Theresa May comes out and says it's Russia definitively. Rex Tillerson says it's Russia definitively.
Right.
The White House says I don't know, could be Russia, could be a fat man on his bed 4,000 pounds tweeting shit out.
More of Devin laughing.
Right. And then Tillerson gets fired.
Right. Right. So there's so much fucked up here. Right. And
like you want to feel bad for Rex Tillerson, but
right.
you can't.
But you can. But what you can feel bad for is the absolute denigration of our institutions. That's right. What feels bad to me.
And from what I read today, just accounts from people from the State Department, like State Department officials are kind of relieved
right.
that he's leaving.
Right. He was not a good Secretary of State. And there were even reports that even though he's this like business guy, he failed to like actually do any sort of management or fill positions with smart people. Apparently it was a total failure.
And I think that's going to be the concern. That's a concern that we should have. Mike Pompeo's confirmation hearing is not going to be until April. So we get a little bit of a reprieve. He gets a little bit of break. Obviously, he has to do the rounds of talking to different people. He was already confirmed. I don't know what his CIA confirmation was. But, we don't really need competent people helping this president out.
Right.
You know, I think that somebody like Mike Pompeo has the smarts to make the State Department a fucking shit show.
Oh, absolutely. And he's a big old Tea Party Republican.
Right.
And he definitely is more in line with Trump's bullshit America First narrative.
Right. And so it will be interesting to see how he, you know, during his confirmation hearings, he backtracked on a few things on especially specifically on torture as CIA director, and which we'll talk about Gina in a second. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see him try to toe that line between how he runs the CIA and how he runs the State Department from a diplomat. Like, Mike Pompeo's background is not in diplomacy.
Right. And this also goes back to a discussion that I feel like we've had on the show before. Or maybe I've just had it in my head because that's who I am now. But the way America has always approached world politics has been with a fairly soft power approach with the threat of a more militaristic action. So it's the Winston Churchill, like, speak softly and carry a big stick. And I feel like that's how America has always really approached, you know, world politics. And so we already saw Rex Tillerson sort of dismantle the State Department and this sort of nexus of soft power by not filling key roles, by not using the money that he was given, by requesting cuts to his own department.
Right.
And then, you know, the other thing that I feel like is in here somewhere is the both chambers of Congress voted for sanctions on Russia. And then the president signed it, couldn't veto, it was veto proof, signed it. And then he has yet to implement any sanctions on Russia that were in this bill. And there's this pot of money sitting at the State Department that is earmarked to create sanctions against Russia that Rex Tillerson has not touched.
I think the one thing that we can credit Mike Pompeo for is that he has not changed the CIA's position on Russia meddling.
No, but I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, something that we can look at and go, okay, Mike Pompeo, maybe as you go into the State Department, maybe you'll look at Russia as more of, and knowing what you know from the CIA,
right?
Maybe you'll look at them more of as an adversary.
But what I'm more worried about, though, and the whole point of that very long Russian sanction story was that there's already been this attempt to dismantle the soft power of the secretary or the State Department. And so Mike Pompeo coming in, being this like hardline Tea Party Republican, very America first, and very, you know, he had some pretty extreme views on torture that he tried to walk back. He's obviously not much of a soft power guy.
No, and I think that he's going to be a little bit like, you know, people talked about John Bolton coming in and possibly being the replacement for Secretary of State at one point. I know that General Mattis and John Kelly had been trying to recruit John Bolton in a certain capacity. You know, I think that's the kind of stuff that we should be afraid of. Mike Pompeo bringing in his own people is something that we should be afraid of. So it'd be interesting to see what his confirmation hearing is going to be like in April, because, you know, he only got 66 votes for his CIA confirmation.
Right. Right. So it wasn't this like overwhelming mandate. So he's going to have to work hard to get confirmed.
He is. And I think right now in an election year, people are going to be trying to make statements.
Right.
You could see a little bit, you know, Gina Haspel is his CIA replacement. And you've already seen some Republicans and Democrats come out against her nomination because of her position, John McCain and a few other people, because of her positions, excuse me, in leading those torture cells during the Bush administration.
Right, right.
So Gina Haspel, you know, I think she's, like I said, so she's going to have a little bit of a hard time getting confirmed. And I think that in an election year like this, it's going to be tough for these confirmations. I
was just going to say, because even Republicans, there's not this newness of the Trump presidency that comes with all of these confirmation hearings, right? He's a brand new president. He was just elected. He obviously didn't have a mandate. He lost the popular vote. Nobody fucking likes him. But there's still this like, well, this is our party. But I think in an election year, the whole country's watching, and the whole country is you know, suddenly very interested in running Democrats in traditionally Republican districts. And these confirmation hearings are going to be a lot rougher than they were back in January.
Especially
last January.
It's only the Senate that has to confirm these people.
Right.
So the House really doesn't
have anything to
have
do
much
with
of a say in what goes on. But a lot of these senators are going to be looking at these a little bit harder. I mean, if you look at what happened tonight, you know, the numbers during the Texas primary last week were, I mean, they were good for Democrats. They weren't great for Democrats,
right.
But Democrats have now seen what they need to make up.
I think there are a lot of Republican senators who are looking at Doug Jones sitting in that Alabama seat and going, huh, well, shit.
It'll be really interesting to see after tonight's Pennsylvania race how many Republicans retire.
Yeah, right. It's like, I'm just gonna get off this fucking
like, you
shit.
Know what? That was fun while it lasted.
Right, bye.
The other part of that is, how much Mitch, the rumor is that Justice Kennedy is going to retire this summer.
Right.
How much capital
is McConnell
does McConnell want to spend on a CIA director that that Republicans are kind of iffy about?
Right.
Mike Pompeo, who he probably didn't like in the first place.
Right.
Fine. And trying to get a Supreme Court justice through.
Right.
But if I was Justice Kennedy, I would wait until after the midterm elections to decide to retire.
Right.
So yeah, that's a political calculation that somebody like McConnell is going to have to make soon. But he's already scheduled those hearings, and I think Gina Haspel has the backing of John Brennan.
Right.
John Brennan came out and said, "Listen, she's a career. She's been in the CIA for 21 years."
Well, and I do think that they're career government officials or career government employees that work in all administrations, regardless of party, and who even if they have political leanings themselves, that's not necessarily part of who they are in their job. And I can respect that. I think that career government employees should be seen as outside of the normal two-party political flow.
Right. And I think with respect to the Bush administration and her leading this, I don't want to call it a task force, but it seemed to be like a task cell that oversaw the torture program. Some people are like, well, she was just doing her job. That's not the line that I would be telling people. You know what I would be saying out loud.
Right.
I think she's going to have to explain why she felt the need to make those decisions. I think that people like John McCain and Kamala Harris
are going to staple her ass to that seat.
Dianne Feinstein, they're going to come at her with questions that she's going to have to be able to answer. And
right.
She's going to have to give good answers to them.
Right. Well, and I think you made a great point. I think especially in this political climate, these confirmation hearings are going to be a lot rougher. They're going
to
be rougher.
And Democrats have a lot to... Democrats who are thinking about running in 2020 have a lot to prove. I think that somebody like Dianne Feinstein, who's in a primary race, but basically a general election at this point. Kevin DeLeon's already come out and said that he would never vote for Gina Haspel. So I think that
she's interestingly positioned.
She's going to have to come out and just be guns blazing on her, even if she votes for her at the end of the day.
Right.
Because I think that she has given her consideration. She's already come out and said, Mike Pompeo and Gina Haspel, I would be giving them, fine consideration, for
right.
these positions. So
right.
That's something that even Democrats are going to have to look at.
Right.
The ones that are being primaried, at least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and just because you might consider them doesn't mean you're not going to pull out all the stops and...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be a show.
It's going to be a show. It's going to be a show. And I think no one puts on a confirmation hearing show like Dianne Feinstein.
That's true.
Whether you like her or not, like, she staples their butts to that chair.
Right.
And gets them to answer her questions. And so I will be very interested to hear what she has to say.
Yeah.
To Gina Haspel.
The other person that was out today was John McKenty, who is the president's body man. That's one of the closest people to the president. They handle, if you're a fan of The West Wing, that was
Dulé Hill.
Dulé Hill's character, Charlie Young. So he was escorted out of the White House over security issues and was revealed to be the subject of a federal investigation. The Secret Service was looking into him. So as we're starting to realize is people around the president... somehow slipped through the cracks.
I do not understand how that it is actually possible for this many people this close to the president to be so fucking criminal.
Because the Office of White House Personnel didn't really do their job.
Right.
And look, even though their career, they probably were told, we need to get these people in.
Right.
They probably were threatened with their jobs. Like,
right.
I want this person.
Right. And they're like, you know what, fuck it.
They're like, fine, whatever. We'll let them in.
Right.
Secret Service is like, meh. I don't know about this guy. even though John McKenty, even though the president's body man doesn't have the security clearance that we...
Like Rob Porter does.
Like Rob Porter did. He is a close person to the president. And especially because he was under... He's under investigation. So if you're under investigation by the Secret Service, it's all financial.
Right.
Because people have to remember that Secret Service is a part of the Department of the Treasury. So he is... was looking at a financial federal investigation. And so when you are that close to the president and you have financial issues, people will use those to your advantage.
Right.
Like Jared Kushner, who I just read to again today, is like a billion, like owes like a bill, like something in the $1 billion range of funds back to, you know, like China or something.
He's super fucked.
Yeah.
Oh, he's super
poor. He's got no money.
Right. Exactly. And that is the sort of thing that foreign governments and foreign agents exploit. And so it makes sense that the you know, Secret Service is looking into him. And it was also interesting is that even though John McGinty was physically escorted from the White House, he less than 24 hours later was given a new job in Trump's 2020 reelection campaign.
With Katrina Pearson.
Right. So obviously, you know, like you said, Office of Personnel slipped through the cracks, probably didn't care that much. But it's clear that the people that are being put forward, it's not even that they didn't know or they did know.
It's that they didn't care.
It's that they didn't care. That's what I'm trying. Yeah, that's what I'm trying. So they didn't care. And that even though they now know that this guy is being investigated by the Secret Service, they still put him on Trump's 2020 reelection. Or, like, that says a lot to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're a bunch of criminals, and criminals like to keep criminals close.
Right.
And especially people that close to the president, I feel like that was... especially in a time where the president is being investigated for something, you don't want people going rogue.
Right.
You want people, you want eyes on them at
all times.
And so that's possibly another reason why they moved to the campaign. Like, you know, Rex Tillerson being out right now, I'm sure Robert Mueller's like,
hello,
come on over.
Come up, we have cookies.
We got a couple of things to talk about, Rexy. T-Rex, come on over.
Exactly. And I'm sure T-Rex is none too happy with Mr. Trump right now.
I'm sure
right
he
now.
Has a lot to say.
A
so,
lot to say. I think that it was clear that Tillerson was always going to be out at some point. But the fact of the matter is, and I think that we cannot take our eyes off of this, the Secretary of State lasting less than a year is... unfucking heard of. It is dangerous. It damages our reputation worldwide. And I understand we have a lot of shit going on domestically, and I'm not trying to minimize that. But when we're dealing with things like a possibility of nuclear war with North Korea.
Right. We've got North Korea talks coming up in
May,
without a Secretary of State.
Right.
Even though confirmation hearings might be in April, it might be May,
right?
Before he actually gets voted on, and even then, that's not enough time
to
prepare,
right?
Him for that. But listen, I who knows what's gonna happen?
I don't ever want us to take our eye off the fact that this is not fucking normal, and. And I'm not saying that we can never rebuild from this, but what Trump is doing to our institutions, I don't feel bad for Rex Tillerson. Like, I don't feel bad that he lost his job. I don't feel bad that he had to hear third hand that he was fired.
Rex Tillerson is going back to ExxonMobil.
And
to
he's
going to
be
money.
Fine.
He's
going
to be fine.
I'm not. But the fact of the matter is that we now live in a time where the president of the goddamn United States of fucking America tweets about his personnel changes. And then waits a couple of hours and then tells the person that he's firing. I don't want to live in this timeline. Right. Like, that is fucking ridiculous. And if for no other reason, like, we have fallen so far from a basic level of decency as a country that, you know, we can talk about the dangers of this all day, and there are a lot. But I want us to always remember that underneath all of that, there's still something so disgusting about the way Trump is picking apart our government with his bare hands.
And whether or not it's intentionally or unintentionally,
it doesn't matter.
It's a very, it's for politicos like us, like it's very sad to watch.
Right.
But I think that America's starting to catch on
a little bit. I think Mike Pompeo is going to have a real tough time.
I think you saw that again in this with Parkland.
Yes.
I think America's starting to catch on to a few things because people are making it known a little bit more. And, you know, we've got this walkout on the 24th. So these things aren't letting up anytime soon, which is good. And I think that, you know, people don't, you know, we grew up being like, oh, don't talk religion and politics in your relationships or, you know, at the family dinner table. Mm-hmm. I think now is the time to have those conversations, as uncomfortable as they're going to be, with people in your circle, because if people don't get out and understand, then, come November, there's nothing that Donald Trump fears more than Democrats winning the House of Representatives in November.
All right. So, Hellions, I did something completely out of character for me. I cooked a meal. I know. But with Sunbasket, it is so easy to cook and cook well. And I didn't even have to go to the grocery store. And I even got my three-year-old to eat what I ate, and he usually hates my cooking. That's because Sunbasket's menu is positively mouthwatering. I'm talking organic produce, responsibly raised meats, sustainably sourced fish, organic pasture-raised eggs, and a whole other list of foodie porn. And it's all personalized. Sunbasket lets you mix and match from paleo, lean and clean, gluten-free, vegan, vegetarian, Mediterranean, and more. And most importantly, it only took me about 30 minutes to make, and like, it was delicious. So if you go to sunbasket.com/hellbent, you can get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/hellbent to learn more and get $35 off your first order. sunbasket.com/hellbent for $35 off. Okay, Drexel. So it's been a while. I've missed you.
I missed you.
Yeah. So tell me, what are you grateful for?
I know we talk a lot of politics on the show. However, in the past couple of weeks, there's been a shift in the entertainment industry where we've seen black movies take the top spots.
Yes.
At the box office. Black Panther has reached $1 billion just in this short amount of time. And then over the weekend, A Wrinkle in Time, Ava DuVernay, her movie, which A Wrinkle in Time is one of my favorite books.
Mine too.
I still haven't seen it yet.
I haven't either.
I'm a big fan of The Giver. It's probably one of my favorite books. And when that movie came out, I was super disappointed. So like, I really don't want to be disappointed. And the reviews have been mixed on the movie.
Right.
Like the reviews, everybody says it's beautiful.
Right.
However, it's a hard book to do.
I was going to say, I feel like A Wrinkle in Time is a really difficult book to make into a movie successfully.
And they said it's a Disney movie.
Right.
You know, it's not for adults. It's definitely for kids. So, you know, I think that, but back to my original point, which was, you know, I'm grateful that the studios have given opportunity, particularly Disney, because Marvel is Disney,
right?
Basically Disney looking at black people like, come on over. You know, we gave Shonda Rhimes basically Shondaland, and we've got Kerry Washington and Viola Davis, and now we've got, you know, Ava and the Black Panther and all the and Oprah. You know, we've got these folks, and so. We should start to look at, moving away from black what people see as movies like the Tyler Perry movies, like black movies are no longer the Tyler right. Perry movies. Black movies don't have to fit into that world and just in that world. And we can find and black people sell.
Right.
Clearly.
Well,
black actors sell until last year. I didn't grow up with Marvel
right.
comics. I grew up with DC comics. So I did not know the Avengers.
Right.
I knew all like the Justice League, and right. the Batman's, which I just saw that movie on the plane last week. It was not good, but Justice League. But so, yeah, it's kind of cool that kids are starting to see some of these characters up. But it was kind of cool, you know, kind of for me to see the Black Panther, a character who I had not seen growing up either
right.
At this point in my life. So I think that it's just, you know, just grateful that, you know, even on TV, we're starting to see that black actors will make a huge impact on certain TV shows. We see that with Sterling K. Brown in This Is Us. We see right. that on Atlanta. We see that on a lot of other shows. So, you know, credit where credit is due to Disney on that. I know Disney's embroiled in a wage issue right now, so hopefully they will start to realize that they need to pay their employees a little bit more of a living wage and set the bar for other companies to do that, especially when you can make $1 billion in 3 weeks
right,
off
right.
of one movie.
Off of one movie, so...
And those black actors didn't even get paid that much.
Right.
What's his name only got paid $1 million?
Yeah.
Everybody else was paid like $400,000.
Yeah.
What are you grateful for?
Well, I was obviously just on vacation, and I am very grateful that I'm in a place of privilege where I can go on vacation and that I can take time away and that I can take time with my family and you know, be able to do that. I'm so grateful that I was able to unplug for a couple of days and not know that Rex Tillerson had been fired until I turned on my phone this morning. I'm grateful that I have such like people around me that have kept this community chugging along, even though I took a couple of days off. And I don't know. I feel very refreshed being able to go away and come back and just get away from it all for a little bit and you know, to, again, be in a place of privilege where I can get away from it. And, you know, that to me is an extremely humbling experience. And I feel so refreshed coming back.
That's good. I loved all of your photos that looked like you were in a James Bond movie.
Right?
Yeah,
I know.
Those were fun.
I know. My sister-in-law takes amazing pictures, and so we were playing in the pool for like hours, because you know you get some tequila and a pool and
some... and you have a photo shoot.
And you have a photo shoot.
It's like the gays. Surprised you weren't with a pack of gays out there in Mexico.
You get some tequila, you get a pool, and then you have a photo shoot. I don't know what you want.
That is all that we do. All right, Devin, you know, it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
But you're listening on Wednesday. And
but normally on Monday.
Normally on Monday, we have a thing that we like to do called Dickwad of the Week.
Week. It's my favorite.
Who's our Dickwad of the Week?
Our Dickwad of the Week is... Betsy DeVos.
Betsy, Betsy, Betsy.
Oh, honey boo boo child.
That interview on 60 Minutes.
No, no. The hot fucking mess.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say she tried. Then she didn't.
But she didn't. She did not try. So Betsy DeVos has been a particular... In my head, she's like my arch nemesis. She's like my arch villain.
She is America's villain.
She's such a fucking villain. And it just, you know, obviously there are, you know, Trump. Okay. You know, Paul Ryan. Okay. Mitch McConnell. These are all obvious villains, right? They are whatever. But there's something about Betsy DeVos that just makes me viscerally angry.
Well, she is Jared Huffman, who is the Congressman from California. said that she, Jesus, he says she, he said that she's rich, white, and dumber than a bag of hammers.
I mean, and the fact that that has translated to her being the Secretary of Education.
Well, she has a lot of money. That's how it translates.
I know, but.
Yeah, and Betsy DeVos doesn't believe in public education so much as she believes in choice. And she said that during her interview,
right.
which it's fine if you think like that. That's not necessarily your job as Secretary of Education.
Sure.
If you want to work with ways to...
You can have an opinion. You can have a point of view. Just you need to be able to... She doesn't understand the underlying framework of her opinion is my problem. And she just says these words. It's like word diarrhea.
Right.
And then she just runs with it. And she thinks, and I think what makes me so angry about it is because she does this. And this is an office that is uniquely situated and deals directly with children.
One of the more disturbing parts that people, you know, people kept talking about how she says she had never gone into Michigan schools. Like, yeah, but the most disturbing part of that interview was when she said, I don't go into underperforming schools.
Right.
Like, what schools are you going into then, girl?
Exactly. Right. Where are you going?
Where are you going?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
You cannot just visit over, like, that's like the president going into
Beverly Hills.
Well, I mean, and not for a fundraiser.
Right.
Just because.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, yeah. Like, oh, I'm going to go see what my country's like. I'm right. going to go to Beverly Hills first. You're like, what?
So you got to figure out where that money needs. So like, that's what people should have been.
Right.
Replaying over, because that was startling to me, and I'm sure it was to the interviewer and people around her, because I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, so she's been championing these school choice policies for fucking ever.
It's because her family right. owns a bunch of them.
Right, exactly. And this is her, she's from Michigan. She's been championing these policies in Michigan forever. And the public schools in Michigan are doing fucking terribly. Even though that she and her family have been pumping money into this choice program in Michigan for, you know, for years. And so, but yeah, I like what you said, like, so she doesn't go to underperforming schools, but then she has this word diarrhea solution for underperforming schools, which is this choice thing.
How do you know?
How do you know?
If you're not talking to the teachers, if you're not talking to the parents, if you're not talking to the students
right.
about what they want.
And what they need.
I would venture to say, well, what they want is more funding. What teachers want is more pay.
Right.
They don't want to have to pay for... their school supplies.
So many of my friends that are teachers, they're like, I spend more of my own money at Target than it is sustainable.
Right. And so I think that's what teachers want
right.
instead of, you know.
And I think honestly, if you schools. Talk about it though, if you really like spit it out, that's also what the parents want. And that's what the students want. Because what the parents really want when you talk about this like school choice policy, it's about getting the best education for your kid, at least theoretically.
So send them to private school.
But if you could have the same, if you could have the same results in a public school by increasing funding and paying teachers better and buying more school supplies, if you could get that same, but closer to home and you don't have to pay $35,000 a year,
right.
which is, I don't know, that's what it costs here in California to send your kid to private school in kindergarten. I feel like that's what everyone wants. But if she's not going to schools, if she's not talking to people, that's what I mean when I say she doesn't have an underlying framework to her opinion.
I think what people forget is that say charter schools become a thing. The bubble is going to pop at some point.
Oh, yeah.
So like charter schools are going to end up just as overcrowded as public right. schools because everybody wants to send their kid to a charter school. Right. So it's like magnet schools or, you know, but they're still public schools. But like though your classrooms are going to be
overburdened,
overcrowded
right.
and your teachers are going to be underpaid.
Right.
So it's going to come full circle at some
exactly.
point. So why don't you just put that money
right
where it belongs, back into teacher pay, back into those public schools. There's a reason why the Department of Defense has its own education department,
right?
The Department of Defense Education Activity, which is what I grew up in, for military dependents. And so, and those schools are great,
right? I'm sure they're very well funded.
Yeah, they're well funded because they're part of the defense budget.
Exactly.
And so if we just funneled that money like they do, you know, it's almost like like people talk about TRICARE Prime being the gold standard for healthcare. You know, I had TRICARE Prime growing up. I believe that other people across the country should have access to a type of healthcare like that.
Right.
The same thing could be applied to education in the Department of Defense schools versus public schools.
I just feel like Betsy DeVos is a fucking cartoon villain. And
somebody needs to take off her Scooby-Doo mask.
Seriously.
See what's underneath.
See what's under, because it's going to be
her
like.
Her brother is even worse, though.
I know. Well, that's Eric Prince. So it's a whole incestual puddle of
bad people.
Bad people who are just hanging out in our upper echelons of government. And, you know, maybe it's because of I'm a mom. I get, you know, like, oh, it's because you're a mom. Maybe. But the fact that it directly affects our children, to me, makes it even more insidious.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I would want my friends' children to have the best education possible.
Because children grow up and then they become the politicians and the firefighters. And
somebody got to take care of us. Shit.
Exactly. Exactly.
We can't have idiots taking care of us now.
Right. So let's maybe educate them.
Yeah.
What?
We don't want little Donald Trumps growing up to be president.
Exactly. And, you know, again, this is not the most popular opinion I have, but I do believe that failure of education is at the nexus of why we have Donald Trump.
Oh, it absolutely is.
The rampant anti-intellectualism that is in this country right now is a breakdown of the education system. And so when Betsy fucking DeVos goes on 60 Minutes and looks like she, like that she's melting out of that Scooby-Doo mask, it just boils my blood.
All right, Devin, we're at the end of the show.
Yes.
It is late.
It is so
late.
We
still don't know who's won the Pennsylvania 18th yet.
We do not.
But we're looking like 98% chance that Connor Lamb's going to win this thing. When he really shouldn't have.
He has no business winning this election.
That, Democrats have no business winning that. But I think Democrats are going to be in a much better position once the redistricting actually happens.
Yes.
Donald Trump today actually distanced himself from Rick Saccone today. So.
He's really good at that.
Yeah, he's really
good at flipping.
Campaign for him, then said, "I don't know.
I don't
like that guy." speaking of getting out the vote, what are some action items for people?
So I think the first one I want to talk about is tomorrow. Most of our listeners are too old for this, sadly, but there will be nationwide school walkouts tomorrow on the 1 month anniversary of the Parkland, Florida school shooting. So I know a lot of young people are going to be doing their own form of peaceful protest during school hours to demand action on gun reform. So I think that's wonderful. And then for us non-youths, there will be a march.
I'm 21, girl. I don't know what you're doing.
You're right. And you don't look a day over 19. there is going to be a march in most major cities. It's called the March for Life, and that will be on March 24th. And that is also organized by the youth march branch of the Women's March for gun safety and gun reform. That has the involvement of the survivors of the Parkland, Florida school shooting. So,
the other thing I want to make sure I bring up is to make sure that people are checking your voter registration between now and November.
Yes.
Things might have changed in your district. Districts might have shifted. Your polling place might have moved. Just make sure that before November that you haven't been purged off of a voter roll.
Right.
Make sure your friends haven't been purged off of a voter roll because right. Republicans are sneaky bitches.
Right. Especially if you were in college or you lived somewhere else for a while right. or you moved. And I know it sounds like November is a long time away, but by the time you've procrastinated a couple of times,
it will get you.
It'll get you.
Especially if you're in college, especially when you go into, especially you're about to graduate.
Right. Oh.
And you're going to, especially those that, because May is coming up. If you're a college student, hey, congratulations. If you're a senior. And once you leave your college, yep, you got to make sure that you find your next place and yep, that you're registered to vote there. So just kind of stay on top of that. We'll try to remind you guys over the next few months about that, because that's going to be super important as we get into, because Republicans are banking that Democrats will forget, will stay home, voter yep, rolls will be purged.
Because when we show up, when we vote, we win.
Exactly.
So thank you so much for taking this late night journey with us. I feel like one of those late night like radio hosts.
Delilah.
Exactly.
Hello, everyone.
My name's Delilah.
My name is Delilah.
And I'm 21 years old.
Give me, tell me your secrets.
Well, anyway, so thank you for joining us on this special late night version of Hellbent. And we will be back with you on Thursday with an interview. Not our special interview, just a regular interview.
And it won't be me.
And it won't be Drexel. I'm sorry.
I'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.